Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, text number 23. Ekastvam Atma Purusha Purana Satyak Swayam Jyotir Ananta Adya Nityo Shiro Jastra Sukho Niranjana Purnad Vayo Mukta Upadito Mritya Eka One Twam You Atma The Supreme Soul, Purushaha, the Supreme Person, Puranaha, the Oldest, Satya, the Absolute Truth, Swayam Jyoti, Self-Manifested, Ananta, without end, Adya, without beginning, Nitya, eternal, akshara, indestructible, ajasra sukha, whose happiness cannot be obstructed, niranjana, devoid of contamination, purna, complete, advaya, without a second, muktaha, free, upadita, free from all material designations, amrita, deathless. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifested, endless and beginningless. You're eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains how the various terms of this verse demonstrate that the transcendental body of Lord Krishna is free from the characteristics of material bodies. All material bodies go through six phases: birth, growth, maturity, reproduction, decline, and destruction. But Lord Krishna does not take material birth. Hence, he is the original reality, a fact clearly indicated here by the word adya. Original. We take our material birth within a particular material atmosphere, immaterial bodies that are amalgamations of various material elements. Since Lord Krishna existed long before the creation of any material atmosphere or an element, there is no question of material birth for his transcendental body. Similarly, the word purna, meaning full and complete, refutes the concept that Lord Krishna could grow since he is ever existing in fullness. When one's material body becomes mature, one can no longer enjoy as in youth. For the words ajasra sukha, enjoying unobstructed happiness, indicates that Lord Krishna's body never reaches or so-called middle age, since it is always full of spiritual youthful bliss. The word akshara, undiminishing, is always full of spiritual youth, refutes the possibility that Lord Krishna's body grows old or declines, and the word amrita, immortal, negates the possibility of death. In other words, Lord Krishna's transcendental body is free from the transformations of material bodies. The Lord does, however, create innumerable worlds and expand himself as innumerable living entities. But the Lord's so-called reproduction is completely spiritual and does not take place at a certain phase of bodily existence. Rather, it constitutes the Lord's eternal proclivity to expand his spiritual bliss and glories. As the Lord states in Shruti Purva Evaham Ihasam, I alone existed in the beginning. Therefore, the Lord is called Purusha Purnaha, the primeval enjoyer. The original Purusha expands himself as the super soul and enters every living being. Still, he is ultimately the absolute truth. Krishna has stated in the Gopal Pani, Tapani Upanishad. Yak sakshad para brahmeti govindam satchitananda vigraham Vrindavana sura buruha talasinam. The absolute truth himself is Govinda, who has an eternal form of bliss and knowledge, and who is sitting beneath the shady trees of Vrindavan. This absolute truth is beyond material ignorance and beyond even ordinary spiritual knowledge, as stated in the same Gopala Tapani Shruti. Vidya Vidya Bhayam Bina Na. Thus, in many ways, the supremacy of Lord Krishna has been established in the Vedic literatures and is here confirmed by the Lord Brahma himself. Translation: You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifested, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means to have the fundamental knowledge which will inspire us to perform devotional service so we can reach the goal, which is prema for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in Sambandha, the basic knowledge is how great Krishna is, Bhagavan, that as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Pravo, Patak Saram Pravartate, Iti Matva Bhajante Mam, Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Aham Sarvasya Pravo, Matak Saravam Pravartate, Iti Matva Bhajante Mam, Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. So the question is, why do people engage in devotional service and fix their mind upon Krishna? Because aham sarvasya prabhava. What does prabhava mean? Yeah, everything comes from Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhava. Matak. Matak means what?
From me.
Yeah. Matak sarvam pravartate. Everything is coming from me. I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me. So, aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. So those who are buddha, intelligent, they fix their minds upon me. Samanvitaha. Now, anywhere we look, if we don't see Krishna, that means we're in maya. At least we're seeing things incorrectly. And because of that, we forget Krishna, and when we forget Krishna, then we're influenced by the illusory energy. So material nature is specifically an opportunity for us to forget Krishna and to think that we're independent of Krishna. That somehow or another we're doing things without Krishna's desire or sanction, and we have our own existence separate from Krishna. The only problem is Bhayam Dvitiya Niveshitasya Isharabhatasya Vipario Smriti. Vipario Smriti means our memory becomes the opposite. Instead of thinking ourselves to be Krishna's servant, we think we're a competitor to Krishna. Whoever is the controller, that we think we're the competitor. That we have to, by our endeavor, by our education, by some means or another, we're going to take control of our material existence here. And by the result is we become fearful. Because as soon as we think ourselves independent controllers, then we misidentify ourselves with this gross and material and subtle material nature. And it's fearful. Because some little insect can come and kill us immediately. But to speak of some tiger can escape from the zoo and eat us on the way to Tivoli Park. We don't think it's likely, but our imaginations are such, we can invent any kind of thing to be afraid of concerning our protection and well-being of this body or things in relation to the body. As a matter of fact, the more relationships we have to this body in terms of I and mine, then the more fearful we become. We become afraid of losing what we have, what we think we have, and it's inevitable that we're going to lose it. So the more things we have, the more we have fear, because there's more things to be afraid of losing, which we have to lose. So the fear is well-founded, because everyone loses everything, including this body, eventually. Not eventually, very shortly, compared to if we live for one of us may live for another 75 years. But compared to eternity, after we leave this body, 75 years has no significance whatsoever. So our future outside this body will be much greater, unlimitedly greater, than this little time we're going to spend in this body. And yet we're so concerned about this 50, 75 years we're going to be in this body, that we neglect the future outside this body. Because we think our relationship, our reality is this body. And outside this body, there is no existence. There are no relationships. But the fact is that our actual eternal relation is with Krishna. After this body, Krishna will still be with us eternally. And we'll still be with Krishna eternally. Therefore, to understand Krishna is the most valuable thing. If you're going to spend eternity with someone, you might as well get to know them a little bit. So here we find out that Krishna is indestructible nectar of immortality. So it would be nice to get to know the indestructible nectar of immortality. We might even become a little happy. So first, our first business is to believe in Krishna. Believe in Krishna means not just theoretically, but to actually experience Krishna. But unless we have some theoretical knowledge about Krishna, then it's very unlikely we're going to experience Krishna. Even, for instance, Krishna says, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who's engaged in full devotional service and failing in all circumstance at once transcends the mode of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya yavyasya cha shasvatasya chidharam sukasya kantikasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is eternal. Brahmanohi pratishtaham amritas yajasya cha shasvatasya eternal, immortal, and imperishable, the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Shasvatasya chidharmasya sukasya kansi kasya cha. I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So we should know Krishna is everywhere. So that's nice if your friend's everywhere. He can help you in any circumstance. If your friend only lives somewhere in Japan somewhere, he may be your best friend, but he may not be able to help you. Especially when the target comes to eat you in Tivoli Park, what can he do? But Krishna is everywhere, and he's not only all-pervading, but he knows everything, past, present, future. So we don't have to worry that if we're actually surrendered to him, then he'll take care of everything. Just like Bharat Maharaj, in his form of Jad Bharat, when he took birth as Jad Bharat, and the dacoits wanted to cut off his head and sacrifice Jad Bharat to the goddess Kali. The goddess Kali couldn't tolerate that a great devotee like Jad Bharat could actually be put into danger. And she burst out of the deity and she slayed all the dacoits, cut off their heads. And then her friends, the witches, came, drank their blood and played with their heads. And Jad Bharat didn't have to do anything. He just had to be a great devotee of Krishna by constantly thinking about him. And Krishna took care of everything else. Similarly, Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't try to offend Durvasa Muni, but Durvasa Muni was looking for some pretext of finding Ambarish Maharaj culpable of doing something wrong, and therefore he snatched from his head a hair and threw it at Ambarish Maharaj to kill him. The hair turned into a fiery demon which was going to kill Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj didn't do anything. He didn't duck, put his hands in front of his eyes or something. No, he simply meditated upon Krishna and tears of ecstasy came from his eyes. He didn't start crying, oh, why this happened to me. No, he meditated on Krishna and he was in ecstasy. And then Krishna himself threw his Sudarsan Chakra and destroyed the fiery demon and went after Durvasa Muni. Now we ourselves, we should probably duck while we're trying to think about Krishna. We shouldn't try to think about Krishna. But if we could avoid the fiery demon by ducking, we should try to do that too. Because I don't know if Krishna will necessarily throw his Sudarsan Chakra to protect us. But if we duck, we might be able to avoid the fiery demon. In any case, it's probably a good idea to try to meditate upon Krishna in all circumstances, because we're not successful in freeing ourselves from the fiery demon, at least we'll be thinking about Krishna at the time of leaving this body, which is ultimately the goal. So as Prabhupada said, well, whether we die today, we die in 25 years, what's the difference? First of all, compared to eternal time, 25 years has no significance whatsoever. And if we're prepared to chant Hare Krishna at the time of leaving this body, then we saved ourselves 25 years of misery. And in any case, if we're chanting Hare Krishna at the time of leaving this body, we get another chance to come back and make advancement towards perfection. Therefore, as it says in the Krishna book, that one should always take an opportunity to hear about how great Krishna is. And it's not an exaggeration how great Krishna is, and it helps us understand how to work in this world and what the goal of life is. Then we can actually find out what is our mutual interest. The only reason why Prabhupada was able to establish Krishna consciousness around the world is because everyone has the same interest, which is to revive their relation with Krishna. Other than that, the only thing we have in common is we're all going to die, for instance, or we're going to have to leave this body. But we can see, if we talk to someone for enough time, we'll find out we disagree about something. There's no question of everyone being in agreement of anything on the material world. There's only disagreement. But in the spiritual world, everyone agrees that Krishna is the object of worship. Even Srimati Radharani and Chandravali, her sister, who are eternal competitors, they both agree that the aim of life is to please Krishna. They're just competing, that's all, to please Krishna more. So, when we find out how great Krishna is, then we can see that our differences are insignificant compared to how wonderful Krishna is. How we should all cooperate for the pleasure of Krishna and set aside our insignificant differences for that. And when we forget that, then we'll just wind up in disagreement with others. Inevitably. And so I can't remember the whole thing, but someone was saying two people met each other in a foreign land like India. They were from England. And he said, the man asked himself, he said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I'm from England." He said, "Well, I'm also from England." "Wow, amazing, we met each other here." He said, "What part of England?" He said, "I'm from Sheffield." "Well, I'm also from Sheffield." "That's amazing, you know, that we have so much in common." And he said, "Well, what church do you belong to?" So he said, "I belong to the Anglican church." He said, "I also belong to the Anglican church. We're practically brothers." He said, "Which Anglican church do you belong to?" "I belong to the Reformed Anglican church." He said, "So do I." "That's amazing." He said, "Which Reformed one?" "I belong to the one from 1798. "So I belong to the one from 1892. He said, you're a deviant. Takes out his gun and shoots him. Bang! So if we discuss anything long enough to each other, we'll find some basis of disagreement. But if we talk about Krishna, then we'll have actually something in agreement. And of course, to talk about Krishna is unlimited because there's so many aspects to him. He's in every sphere of activity. But that's what we have to find, is how Krishna is in every sphere of activity, so we can mutually agree with how to serve Krishna in that sphere of activity. And utilize our differences in Krishna's service, and therefore they become like different beautiful flowers in a flower pot. When there are different flowers in a flower pot, then they complement each other. They don't disagree with each other. They make the flowers, arrangement of flowers, even more beautiful because of their differences. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Well, there's a process to surrender.
Can you repeat
in that mind? Can I repeat? Yes. He has the microphone now, so he can repeat. It works? Well, in 1866, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about surrender. He says, Sarva dharma prachaja mam ekam sharanam raja ahang tvang sarapa pebyo mokshi syami masucha. Give up all varieties of religion. So that's our first thing. We want to surrender. Give up every, try to gradually give up things which are not directly related to Krishna consciousness. And then surrender to me. And in return, I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So then we have to give up our anxiety that if we surrender to Krishna, that I'll be missing something. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, Sharanagrati. There are six steps of Sharanagrati, namely, Anukulyasya Sankalpe, Pratikulyasya Varjana, Rakshisya Titi Vishvaso, Gopriva Varnam Tata. Atma Nikshepa Sankalpe, Shadvida Sharanagrati. There are six steps of surrender. First, to accept everything favorable. So that's what we're trying to do. Chant japa, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worship the deities, serve the devotees, and try to make our lives spiritual and preach Krishna consciousness to others. So that's favorable. And then, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjana. And then give up the things which are taking our minds away from Krishna. Follow the four of the principles, try to not waste time, etc. Try to get detached from things which were irrelevant to Krishna consciousness. And then the result is Rakshisya Titi Vishvaso. Then we'll actually have faith Krishna will provide for us. Then we'll give up our anxiety that I'm missing something. Krishna will give us what we need. And Gopdrivevaranasthatai. And he'll protect us from forgetting him and from things that may interfere too much with our Krishna consciousness. And Atma Nikshepa, then we'll always have the same goals as Krishna. Atma Nikshepa Sankalpe. And we'll always feel meek and humble in relation, compared to Krishna and Krishna's service. And Shadvida Sharan. So this is this different steps of surrender to Krishna. So memorize what the steps are and then you'll know what the steps are. Memorize what the steps are and then you'll know what the steps are. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
I'm thinking about this in the purport it says that that Lord Krishna's happiness cannot be obstructed.
If you frown, he's still happy. It's unobstructed. Generally speaking, we're in company with people who are happy. We're happy if we're in a party, and if we're going to a funeral and everyone's crying, we start crying too. But Krishna is still happy even at a funeral. Yeah, there's nothing that even when Bhishma Dev was shooting arrows into Krishna, Krishna was still happy. He wasn't calling 9/11 to come in the ambulance to take the arrows out. He was still happy.
Because
qualitatively, we also have the same qualities as the Lord, not the quantitative. So I was thinking that in our eternal position, we also, our happiness can also be not checked.
That's
right. Good. Anything else? It's good realization. All we do is have to enter into our spiritual body, our spiritual consciousness, and with full spiritual consciousness, and we'll be happy forever. Wouldn't that be nice? Anything better than that? Anyone know something better than being happy forever? In full consciousness. Eating pizza and ice cream is not better than that. It's just a little part of that. Anything else? Grandhara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.